Let's pause. Imagine you are in a large dark room. Maybe the shadows are whispering like too much black taffeta, swirling in the corners, but there is light, a bit glorious, maybe esoteric, unearthly. Is that too much, too much? But the light bathes an enormous painting set front and center, the Night Watch, militia portrait, with militia members gathering almost ghostly, milling around you, near life-size individuals portrayed. And as you stand alone, Cha, this is a very popular painting. Alone might be if you're working the night shift, maybe doing security or as the janitor. No shade there. I worked cleaning the Museum of Natural History at the University of Utah as a teenager. You may feel up close to the protective barrier that you're kind of milling around amongst the crowd of civic protectors. No matter your age, background, education, a bit of a thrill maybe? Not being bumped into by other visitors, no claustrophobia, just you and the brush strokes. Maybe you're letting a peppermint dissolve slowly. Shotzi's sitting here with me, so you may hear her. She was just barking at somebody that slammed their door, so she's calming back down. The air has that unmistakable museum scent, old building. It may be perfectly clean, but there are old pieces of art. They are fighting the inevitable change and breakdown time brings. There's floor polish and probably a trace of coffee brewing and drips of coffee on the hot plate. This from the cafe down the hall. Maybe there would be a wisp of Mexican vanilla sugar cookies baked in the small behind-the-counter workspace. Honestly, it feels like we've just created a candle scent together. Let's call it Museum Glow. Note to self, pitch that to the Goblin Court crowd. During daylight hours, art lovers and artists wander these spaces. Some are there for the vibe. Some study form and light, Fibonacci spirals. Some are looking for the story inside the story. Maybe they are there with paint and easel, doing a master copy. And others were forced to be there to join the person they are with. You want to hang out? We're going to the museum. When we visit the museum, new questions may surface. New and sometimes seemingly magical mysteries you didn't know about or even existed surface. Like, why did Van Gogh's pink roses turn white? With the Night Watch, they found during restoration that it was not set at night, but during the day. Varnish had darkened over time. There are a few questions. Why was a dog included in the bottom corner of the militia group portrait? Why weren't the group members seated or standing well inside each other's personal bubbles, uncomfortably close, like the style in most militia portraits of the time? An unusual composition, the Night Watch was not what was ordered. So, as he followed his own bliss, did Rembrandt just throw pigment to the wind and say, the heck with it, at some point? Just done. Unable to conform to specifics of one more portrait the same as the others. His patrons killing him with same old, same old. But the dog. Did Rembrandt decide a dog was more interesting to look at than the militia? Or was somebody BFFs with their dog and took them everywhere? Did he need a break from figuring out where each and every one of the 34 militia members belonged in the painting? Did he simply add a touch of quasi-passable humor with the dog barking at the drummer? The painting was commissioned by Captain Bannock Cock and 17 members of the militia. 18 names appear on the shield that were added later. This was commissioned to hang in the banquet hall. the Grootzaal, Great Hall of Klovnerstolen, which has been turned into a hotel now. No, not Dutch, not remotely, so please excuse my pronunciations. If you're an armchair museum visitor, along with me and the rest of our Whispering Gallery crew, we tend to notice these things. Could Rembrandt have included a hidden to some viewers coded message sent a couple of centuries ago or so to you and me? Or maybe he was simply pointing out the obvious, or maybe it's just a painting of the militia in a different format than everybody liked at the time. Was Rembrandt van Rijn in the unique position as an observer of this group, painter of this crazy big yearbook picture of who's who, the group portrait contract employee, able to see and maybe overhear the speculation, over the cubicle wall, if you will, just outside the door, about how their previous captain died? All the, quote, "you know what really happened," unquote, conversations stopped in the lunchroom when he walked in, / dinner table. His research and understanding of placement of individuals and symbols working. Conversations over the bathroom stall walls, outhouse, inappropriate, bad timing, and awkward, with whodunit suppositions. With the Night Watch painting, are we looking at a whodunit? A murder mystery? Not the results of a militia accident? I have a quote from the mystery show Slow Horses that is on Apple TV Plus. Quote, Lamb said, "If you had issues with him, I could have spoken to HR, arranged an intervention." He tapped Moody's shoulder with his foot. "Breaking his neck without going through your line manager, that shit stays on your record." Unquote. While the man in black in the painting may be the obvious baddie in a spaghetti western, it was a fashion statement for the Dutch in the 1700s. Still with the use of light and dark clothing, the two standout subjects pop quite a lot more than the others. Some of the guys who paid for a spot in the painting didn't feel like they got their money's worth. Via an article in The Guardian over 18 years old, The Old Black by Charlotte Higgins, quote, "Black was predominant, according to Betsy Wiseman, curator of Dutch paintings at the gallery, partly because it implied, quote, sobriety and modesty, but at least as important was the fact that it was fashionable. These days, when you go out somewhere special, the chances are that you reach for black." Well, for much of the 17th century, it was like that in the Netherlands, unquote. Welcome back to the Spookyville Passageways and Exhibits of the Whispering Gallery. With me, the apparition of the arts, your teller of the sometimes paranormal and always mysterious spooky art stories, Suzanne Nicolaisen, with Shotzi and Boomer. You can hear the clocks ticking in the living room. We have two, because one wasn't enough. And I'm recovering from total knee replacement surgery, so this is where I'm recording today. Knee elevated, ice on it, and here we go. I've got a quick news update on our cute little foster tweeny dozer. He was adopted and is living the good life with his family in Colorado, where they go for walks by the river close to home, and he was so loved before they even ever met. His new dad compared adopting Dozer to their baby arriving. In fact, when they left after work, their car broke down a couple of hours into their drive, and it had to be towed back to the shop. They got home, switched vehicles, and headed back out from Colorado to Salt Lake City, Utah, to pick up their little guy. Since then, His family has sent photos of them on hikes and kayaking, him sunbathing. Little Dozer is having a good time, and his fur has grown back from his wildly out of control allergies, and he looks healthy and happy and loved. More dog updates. This is just my little corner of RMDR experience. But okay, we also had a visit from Lynn, a spunky little short-haired dapple hiker enthusiast. Her foster family had travel plans, so she spent a few days with us. And Bella, standard chocolate short-haired dapple, was returned to the rescue and spent a couple of weeks with us, even though her adopters had agreed to take care of her allergies and her monthly shot. That was the reason she was returned. Sometimes I think I should record these stories as well as what we talk about in the Whispering Gallery. In the middle of her visit, I had my knee surgery, and pro tip, probably not the best idea to foster during recovery from something like that. But she was a good nurse, and by the time she was adopted again, this time to her forever family, she had decided she needed to guard me from everybody. Now she's been adopted and has a golden retriever bestie and has been settling in for the last couple of weeks. I've got to tell you guys, we love all of these dogs
and it is really
hard to let them go. And a lot of times we wonder, should we adopt them and apply for a kennel license or whatever, you know, whatever it's called in our neck of the woods for keeping more than two dogs. But we talk about it, and then we couldn't foster the next one because we'd be full up. You may notice the front door creaking as it opens on the shadow-filled lobby of the Whispering Gallery, where the only thing fighting the dark of night is the thin, bare illumination of the ghost light, appeasing the spirits, we hope. And the rest of the Night Watch story awaits. The light flickering across the room? That's just me trying to get my flashlight to come on. I hope you're having a good evening as the sun melts into a pool of melted pralines and cream on the horizon. Let's take a long cleansing or clearing breath to clear the spider webs, museum dust, and bats from the proverbial belfry, and head back through the expansive fields of sweetly nodding tulips, past the canals full of flowing water, rotating windmills along the way. At last, at the bicycle passageway underpass connecting the museum plain and Stadthoderskog through the Riksmuseum. Up the stairs, to the second floor, to the home of the Night Watch. Another note on pronunciation. I took 3 years of German in high school, so I may be taking pronunciation liberties towards German rather than Dutch. Pardon that. Thanks. Some modern parallels in true crime and forensics. The story of the Night Watch painting does align with a few common elements seen in modern true crime media. I mean, who are we kidding? I'm no detective in real life. Well, sometimes the dog rescue stories need research. But like Dateline, CSI, or Slow Horses, or what's the one with the True Detective?
I guess I'm being a little loosey-goosey with fiction and nonfiction. Believe it or not,
I've run into a true crime podcast before. Ha ha. Clearly not my forte. I'm slightly more aligned with the In Search Of 70s paranormal TV show vibe. It's up to us to sift through the noise and do our best to find the answers. Even if we are not trained visually to observe, as Peter Greenaway comments in his J'ai Accuse film. I mean, what do you call it? It's not a movie. It's not a documentary. Or is it with skits? He's inserted. Film. Rembrandt's composition was something that would pop out from the norm. If you're looking at other militia portraits in the Dutch Golden Age, did Rembrandt embed clues left as messages? He certainly highlighted Captain Frans Pennetkok, the Red Sash, and Lieutenant Willem van Breitenberg, Yellow Outfit, or Cream, standing out in front of the crowd. So what was the accusation?
Peter Greenaway posits in Rembrandt's J.A.Q.'s that the civic militia guard, Piers Hasselberg, was not killed by accident, but instead that he was murdered, and additionally another morally corrupt accusation. But I'm not here to go down every side accusation, Greenaway suggests. He also suggests that not everybody knows how to read art, and maybe not, but not everyone could come up with the conspiracies he did. That might just be unique to Peter. So we're in the 17th century, the Dutch Golden Age. Rembrandt was known as a master painting shadow and light during the Baroque period. Chiaroscuro, Tate.org defines as, chiaroscuro is an Italian term which translates as light, dark, and refers to the balance and pattern of light and shade in a painting or drawing. The National Gallery in London shares tenebrism is a term derived from the Italian tenebroso, which means darkened and obscuring. It is used to describe a certain type of painting in which significant details, such as faces and hands, are illuminated by highlights, which are contrasted with a predominantly dark setting. The glowing girl in the Night Watch is an example of this. A quote from the letters of Vincent van Gogh to his brother, 1872 to 1886, he said, quote, Rembrandt is so deeply mysterious that he says things for which there are no words in any language. Were there symbols in Rembrandt's painting, as Peter suggests? Did Rembrandt plan it so the symbols told the story of the accusation? Peter thinks there are a whole bunch of clues painted in, so Rembrandt's message would have been hidden in plain sight. To quote Hercule Poirot, every murderer is probably somebody's old friend. Did the victim have ties within the militia to the murderer if this wasn't a militia accident? That's one heck of a fractured civic group. If the new leader of the group took out the old leader, if so, it wasn't like they were as obvious as the Neanderthals represented in Stanley Kubrick's rendition of 2001 Space Odyssey. The citizen militia, the Schutterij, it's S-C-H-U-T-T-E-R-I-J, was the guard that maintained peace in the city and protection from external threats. That was how they started out. Later years, it was perhaps more civic pride, dinner club with muskets, and they were later replaced by the organization of the police. The cloveniers were named after the guns they used. Think of the police, firemen, the people who care for our community and protect us. They were representing their cities as part of Amsterdam, which in the 1600s was growing. Think Three Musketeers. Check out the free coloring page on the Whispering Gallery Patreon page to play with some of these mysteries as you color. The cloveniers were named after the arquebus, aka clover in Dutch, a firearm, a pre-musket muzzle-loading gun. See the guns in the painting. One is being loaded, another is still smoking after being fired. This may have been one of the clues embedded in the composition. So why were they named the cloveniers and not musketeers? Each group was named after the gun they used. The Night Watch was commissioned right around the same time the musketeers were working for the king in France. This painting seems to have been a turning point in Rembrandt's career. Was this one of those times when a friend or two may have egged him on? Was he as easily influenced as you or me? Actually, maybe. He wanted to paint like the Italian painters, but didn't want to go to Italy. That's a bit of influence, that there. From Merriam-Webster.com, cold case, noun. An unsolved criminal investigation, as of a homicide or abduction, that has stopped being actively pursued because of a lack of evidence. Did Remy understand the undertones or rumors as he was working on the painting, that he pieced together from fragments of observation, sleuth-like, but maybe unintentionally getting the story as he pulled together the large and complex painting? What would you have done? Was the painting a way of whistleblowing? Or simply laying his observations out there for consideration? What do you think? Weird, right? Message to viewers. It was a very different portrait of 34 militia members, plus a powder boy, drummer added for free, and the dog, the glowing girl, which is one of the conspiracies, with names of the members on a shield in the archway. Names added later. Given the surrounding rumors, maybe some of the militia members would have rather called in sick on picture day. The Night Watch painting's original names? The company of Captain Franz Bannockcock and Lieutenant Willem van Reitenberg, known as the Night Watch, and the Night Watch Militia Company of District 2 under the command of Captain Franz Bannockcock. It seems that some people think Rembrandt wasn't paid, but more than one person thinks he was. One source said 1,000 and another 1,600 guilders for the painting, bought and paid for by 17 of the 34 members of the militia. Which would be like when you're broke and your friend has money and wants to go to lunch? So the other 17 militia members got to tag along for free? Because the ones that were loaded and could pay for it. This was years after the militia guards were actively fighting to protect the city, and the group had turned into a socially inclined meetup group. Maybe a networking group? Might look good on your resume, or when name-dropping? I'm not 100% sure what the purpose had become to get together after they were no longer fighting for the safety of the city, or how a social group might have developed into the murder of a leader, unless it's just another case of baloney to get people interested in art, like the Monet ghost story in an earlier episode we did. What do you think of when you hear the word vandalism? Do you lean toward art on a building? Like murals, or what about graffiti? Typography on train cars? Banksy tagging a building? Art? While in Park City, Utah for work, I got to see a Banksy piece in person on the side of a Java Cow coffee shop on Main Street. Yep, there it was. And coincidentally, the cameraman was inadvertently targeted by vandals. From Britannica.com, quote, graffiti, form of visual communication, usually illegal involving the unauthorized marking of public space by an individual or group. Although the common image of graffiti is a stylistic symbol or phrase spray-painted on a wall by a member of a street gang, some graffiti is not gang-related. Graffiti can be understood as antisocial behavior performed in order to gain attention, or as a form of thrill-seeking. But it also can be understood as an expressive art form. Merriam-Webster lists vandalism as a noun, willful or malicious destruction or defacement of public or private property. Attacks on the Night Watch. Up first, vandalism. There were witnesses. The Crop. In 1715, the Night Watch faced its first big transformation. The painting, already massive, like a 17th century jumbotron, okay, maybe not that big, was moved from its original home at the militia headquarters to the Amsterdam Town Hall. But there was a problem. It didn't fit. The solution? They trimmed it down. Have you ever tried cutting something down and thought, oh crap, I took too much? It seems they carefully planned what to crop. Cropping was common for paintings during that time. I don't know if it was the whole golden age of Dutch paintings, but Rembrandt was not the only one to have had his art cropped. Who knows, maybe he took that into consideration while planning the piece. But two of the militiamen were actually removed, and we have no idea who they were. They, presumably the interior decorator, or maybe it was in conversation with the movers? Or do you think they maybe even consulted Rembrandt himself? Trimmed away whole sections just under 2 feet, 23 inches from the left, almost 3 inches, 2.75, from the right, 9 inches from the top, and more than 4.4 inches from the bottom. Not preserved, just gone. 44 square feet disappeared like a ghostly gallery rug pulled out from under the painting, leaving behind a masterpiece that's forever missing pieces of itself, including two mysterious figures lost to time. 1911, The Slash. An unemployed former Navy chef suddenly lunged at the night watch with a knife. Why? He never explained. Maybe he just wanted to ride the coattails of the painting's fame? Luckily, the damage was cushioned by a thick layer of old varnish. Ironically, that same murky varnish is what gave the painting its dark, moonlit look in the first place. The reason people started calling it the Night Watch. 1940s, Into Hiding. During World War II, the Night Watch was considered too precious to risk in the open. First, it was packed away with some 30,000 other artworks in a bunker on the Dutch coast. But when that felt too exposed, it was moved again in 1942, this time to a limestone cave in Maastricht. There, in the dark and the damp, the giant painting lay hidden until the war was finally over. 1975, The Mission. A man named Wilhelmus de Rick walked into the Rijksmuseum after lunch carrying a knife he'd just bought. He later claimed he was sent by the Lord on a mission from God. He slashed the night watch again and again before guards stopped him. The canvas was repaired, but moments like these show a troubling pattern. Religious delusion and unresolved anger turning a great work of art into a target. And they leave those who live with mental health challenges struggling against the stigma such acts create. 1990, The Acid. A Dutch national walked up to the night watch and sprayed it with sulfuric acid. His motive? Never explained. Thanks to the lightning-fast response from guards, only the varnish layer was burned away. The paint itself was saved. Still, it's hard to comprehend. Why take it out on a piece of art? Why hurt an unarmed painting? Making a statement? Personal grief? Lit up with political fire? Coattails fame? Jealousy? The Night Watch, as a Dutch national treasure, has been through a massive restore with a team of humans using the assistance of AI and a reproduction of the original. Replacing the missing pieces of the painting on all four sides with what would seem like a very educated guess on what and who went missing. Have you ever watched conservators work on social media? With just varnish removal of dark, dirty, dingy-looking layers and reapply fresh varnish, making the painting pop, it's a fascinating process to watch and worth looking up. So Rembrandt van Rijn. Rembrandt, Herman Zoon, that's son of Herman van Rijn, from the River Rhine. Born 1606, died 1669. Centuries later, our Rembrandt still lingers, having been laid to rest in an unmarked grave, owned by the church, and after 20 years, it was common practice to discard the remains, so we actually don't know where he is. In 1909, a marker was added, but this is not his final resting place. Born in Leiden, the son of a miller whose windmill sails turned with the winds from the Rhine, grinding corn, Rembrandt was part of a big family. He trained as an artist and married Saskia, the love of his life, and for a time he had success, wealth, and fame, but his story isn't just triumph. Saskia died young, and later he had a relationship with their son's nurse that collapsed into scandal, and the nurse ended up in an asylum. The Night Watch, over time, has brought Rembrandt posthumous glory. Always so helpful for artists trying to make a living, right? But it was a turning point in his life. Patrons seemed to drift away after. He was known for being stubborn, unbending, and not willing to yield on artistic vision. I mean, with some people who have learned their craft and gotten so far with it in life, maybe a little trust would be in order? That he could pull something off that was requested? Like, just give me the creative brief, I've got this. Maybe a senior artist slash art director? Did he just say forget about it? Was it rebellion or retreat? One can almost imagine him as a Dutch Perrault of the paintbrush, attuned to clues others missed, a shift of position, someone in more shadow than light, a gesture frozen like the smoke from the musket shot. Why did he decline? Was it by choice? Was the world too much, too hard to bear, too people-y? Had he been let down one too many times and was heartbroken and just done? After the death of Saskia, the criticism of the Night Watch, the entanglement that could have been mapped out, and puzzles and subtleties in the work, maybe he just noped his way right out of there. Quietude helping him bear his grief. Late at night, maybe he grated chocolate into a steaming cup of cocoa, setting out cookies. Was he listening for whispers the rest of us never catch? Perhaps he simply couldn't play the world's game anymore, whether from sorrow, exhaustion, or the heavy ghost of depression. Yet his canvases still thrum with life, glow with real Dutch light from the Golden Age. He could be watching from the shadows, inviting us to consider the mysteries. The following is a quote from Rembrandt. Quote, "Of course, you will say that I ought to be practical, and ought to try and paint the way they want me to paint. Well, I will tell you a secret. I have tried, and I have tried very hard, but I can't do it. I just can't do it. And that is why I am just a little crazy." Rembrandt may have lived with strabismus. Another word for it is stereoblind, which means he would have been unable to see depth in the usual way. But that some might call a limitation could have been part of his genius. By seeing the world a little differently, he may have been better able to translate life to the flat surface of a canvas. Sometimes, the things that make us different make our work unforgettable. We may not be Rembrandt, but we can borrow a paintbrush from his cup of persistence. Maybe you wrestle with your eyesight, or maybe it's certain ideas in art that feel difficult to apply. Whatever the case, there's purpose in the attempt to try. We can search up a tutorial in seconds, but for Rembrandt, practice meant turning his gaze back on himself again and again, resulting in almost 100 self-portraits, including paintings, etchings, which is a type of print, and drawings. I saw one of Remy's self-portraits, the beret and turned-up collar, once at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. I was there due to a trip for a funeral. Standing there, it was almost a Ferris Bueller moment. The painted self, thick strokes, pressed into time. You may not care for every one of his self-portraits, but one or two might stop you in your tracks, the way that one did for me. Rembrandt may remind us just to keep going. Practice, rinse, and repeat. Like your shampoo bottle. If the only model is you, self-portrait time. The artists who painted the militia pieces for this great hall decoration included portraits of themselves among the heads of the militiamen. They are gazing straight out at you. They think it's Rembrandt looking over someone's shoulder. You can only see his eye. This mystery, while still unsolved, has at the very least taken us on an exploratory trip to the Netherlands to the world-famous superstar painting at the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. The pre-police era, civil militia, during the 1700s, Rembrandt's life, from the Rhine, and unknown answers about mysteries we can't really prove or necessarily disprove. Clues hiding in plain sight, shadows cast just so, figures arranged not for balance but for truth. And maybe that's what cost Rembrandt his steady commissions and livelihood. Maybe that's an easier story than that he was just plain difficult to work with. What happened to the guys Rembrandt supposedly called out in the painting for the accusation of murder? Did they slip away into time, avoiding any big tell-all exposés like with the Anderson Cooper of their time? No broadsheets splashed with accusations? Or were there? The Night Watch was finished in 1642, and just over two decades later, in 1665, flying ships were sighted, battling, and, seen as an omen from God, over Stralsund, Swedish Pomerania, now Germany. earlier episodes of the Whispering Gallery are kind of like old spooky friends, or maybe graham crackers dipped in milk late at night. There, that sounds a little more friendly. You might go back and check out the episode where we talk about the woodcut broadsheet print of the celestial phenomenon in 1561, depicting a dawn sky with ships in battle in the sky. Netherlands is bordered on the east by Germany. Strange sky battles on and off next door, and this mysterious painting of Rembrandt's, all of these many years later, still full of possible clues. Kind of hard to imagine he painted an accusation. Stay safe in the autumn chill, dear friends. Be kind, practice radical empathy, and let no one dim your light. You were made to shine. And don't forget to keep your flashlight close and your spooky art stories closer when visiting the Whispering Gallery.